Thanks, Nathan. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Now we're going to continue our reporter's notebook with a conversation about one of the most complicated and controversial issues facing Baltimore today, the $5.5 billion proposal to develop Port Covington in South Baltimore. Sagamore Development, the development arm of Kevin Plank and Under Armour, has proposed to build what amounts to a city within a city on Baltimore's southern shore. It's a project that is slated to unfold over decades, and it has the potential to transform the city's economy and its international profile. Critics, however, are wary. They fear that it will further segregate the city and that local leaders are missing an opportunity to create not only jobs, but affordable housing and a road out of poverty for many residents. Joining me to walk us through the latest in the ongoing Sagamore saga are Natalie Sherman of the Baltimore Sun and Melody Simmons of the Baltimore Business Journal. Good morning to you both. Good to see you.
Good morning.
So, Melanie, you were at a meeting last night, which was one of several public hearings held. Last night was billed as a work session, and this is part of a group of meetings that Carl Stokes, the chair of the committee that's sort of shepherding this bill through, has been holding. What happened last night? And give us a sort of an overview on what's been going on in these previous meetings. A whole lot of people are showing up to these things.
Yes, for once, we're really seeing a lot of participation. We have seen hundreds of people show up. There's been 10 hours of hearing, public hearing testimony so far on three pieces of legislation. Last night was the first of three work sessions, which is basically kind of diving into the legislation to make amendments if needed, rewrite language, and then present the new form to the full council, possibly after Labor Day. It's really sausage making.
Right. And Natalie, one of the things that's funny about this is that people can't even those of us in the media can't agree on the number. Some people report $535 million TIF or tax increment financing. Others use the number $660 million. What's the difference between those two numbers?
So technically, they're both right. The 535 is what the developer is asking for infrastructure. And so that's what would be spent on the roads, on the parks, on the sort of projects that you've heard about. $660 million is what the city would have to borrow to get that amount of money to actually spend, because there are fees, there's interest, there are issuance costs, and things like that.
A lot of this seems to come down, Natalie, to dueling studies. Build, the Baltimore United in Leadership Development, commissioned a study from a group called Tischler Buys, and then the city had a study completed by a group called Battelle Technology Partnership, and they come to different conclusions about what the impact of the of this project will be and what it will cost. How's anybody, including people on the Baltimore City Council, supposed to figure out who's right and who's not?
Well, that's a pretty good question. One of the things that as a reporter I've been very struck by during this process is to what extent the numbers are fluid. The development plan has changed since the project was introduced, since that first study was written. And so it is very hard to get a grip on the numbers. People are making projections. Sagamore sort of wants to change the market in Baltimore, so it's really hard to do those calculations. So I think there's healthy room for disagreement about what the impact would be. But part of that is the underlying numbers. There's not really a clear plan out there.
And Millie, you reported that although one of these studies, the one by Battelle Technology Partnership, it's been known about, but it hadn't actually been released until just last week. So what did we learn when we actually saw it in the flesh?
We didn't learn much. The trail on that study is very unusual because the Sagamore development folks, not that they ever embraced that study, and I think that they paid for part of it or all of it. And so it came out through the city because I think it was landed in a batch of documents that they gave to the city and the city posted online. But that study was asked for many months and sought after and you never received an answer. I asked for it in writing with the Sagamore representatives, and they just wrote me back and said, everybody's out of town. So, but
nobody's minding the store.
Nobody's minding the store. But when the study finally came to light, it really didn't say anything new. It was everything that we had seen in testimony and heard in testimony before.
Melody Simmons of the Baltimore Business Journal. We're joined by Natalie Sherman of the Baltimore Sun. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, Natalie, you had a story a couple of days ago about the fact that Kevin Plank is buying, among other things, the water taxi service. He's got an interest in stuff around Holland's Market. He's got a whiskey business. He's got all sorts of things. So Port Covington is just sort of a piece of things that he's got financial interest in. What does this all add up to? He certainly is owning a lot of stuff in Baltimore, isn't he?
He is. I should say Holland's Market, I believe, is his brother, Scott Blake.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
But that does not limit the truth of your statement. I think the water taxis are pretty directly related to his Port Covington investment. One of the challenges of that project is the transportation and getting there and getting people around. And so that's pretty direct.
Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake was on this program about 3 weeks ago, and we talked a little bit about this. And she really takes umbrage with people who are opposing this, the community groups and others who are raising questions about the numbers and about the viability and also about the guarantees or lack thereof that Sagamore is going to give. Here's a portion of our conversation.
When cities around the country take a look at the pushback that some in the community are given to this development, they're salivating. They would love to have Under Armour to invest billions in their community.
But is any of that pushback legitimate in your mind? I mean, has this been
vetted
fully?
It's not up to me to say whether it's legitimate. They can feel how they want to feel. It doesn't change the fact. It has been vetted. It's been vetted by the Board of Finance, by the Baltimore Development Corporation. Even the City Council has been able to hear and ask questions of the developers. This is a project that has been vetted. This is a project that will bring jobs and resources and opportunities. And I'm proud of the work of the South Baltimore Six that came together, that took a look at this project, that said this is going to be a benefit to Baltimore and it's going to be a benefit to our community. And it's going to be so not because the ACLU negotiated a deal for us or Bill negotiated a deal for us, but because those communities who were directly impacted by Port Covington came to the table in their own name and with their own priorities and agenda and sat at the table and got their needs met. And I'm extremely proud of the way that those communities stepped up to the plate and developed a negotiated an agreement that will provide job opportunities and community development for decades to come.
So, Natalie Sherman, what's your reaction to that? It's interesting to me on two levels. First, she talks about the South Baltimore Six, which are the neighborhoods in this area. But the second thing is she's saying that these other communities around the country are salivating. They would love to have Under Armour. Given what you've been reporting about Mr. Plank's somewhat voracious acquisition of property and stuff in Baltimore, does one really believe that Mr. Plank would pick up his marbles and leave if he didn't get everything that he's asking for in this legislation, not only from the city, but from the federal government as well?
So this is something that's been really hard to get a good read on, I think. His folks always say, you know, Kevin Plank is investing in one city, and that's Baltimore, and we're committed. And as you say, they've put a lot of money where their mouth is. The city will say, we think they're looking elsewhere. But they haven't really said that much, frankly. So I don't know how much that's in play. Under Armour has locations around the country, and they've been growing, and they're not above telling people that they're signing a bigger lease in San Francisco on the day of a hearing about Port Covington. But they haven't really made big noise about that.
Because it is sort of a matter of how much leverage the city has in this negotiation, Melody. I mean, Build wants to negotiate directly with Sagamore. The unions wanted to negotiate directly with Sagamore. Jack Young has even, the president of city council, suggested that the unions do just that. How many people is Sagamore going to have to negotiate with before something gets ironed out?
Well, what we're seeing now with this committee and the work sessions is more of a communal negotiation that's going on in public, which is great. I think that the mayor is, I'm interested in her comments to hear her say that she thinks the whole deal should be bought hook, line, and sinker, because what we're seeing is democracy in action. We're seeing people bringing up grassroots advocates. We're seeing people who have interests in certain issues like workforce development, fair housing, and we're also going to see transparency issues. Last night it came up that they should establish a TIF website in the city to kind of promote for people to see how much the city is actually invested in all of its TIFs, not only this giant TIF. But I think when all is said and done, we're going to see a different bill. The legislation is going to be different than what's on the table right now because of all this input. And that's a good thing.
The mayor makes a lot of what she calls the Baltimore Six, those neighborhoods right around the community, Port Covington and those communities. And she says, you know, they've gotten assurances from Under Armour and from Sagamore, Natalie, that they're going to be helpful. It could mean as much as $39 million invested in neighborhoods like Brooklyn and Cherry Hill and Curtis Bay. On the other hand, the TIF is going to be underwritten by the entire city. So groups like BUILD are saying, look, we can't concentrate just on the contiguous neighborhoods to Port Covington. We've got to worry about the entire city. What are you hearing on the street about sentiment in that regard?
Well, I think that it's always been sort of on the table that there might be two agreements, one citywide and one for the immediate neighborhoods. And so I think, as Melody says, that's sort of what we're seeing be put together during these work sessions.
Two separate things.
Yes.
What's your guess on the timeline for this? I mean, is Labor Day going to be a demarcation? Carl Stokes has talked about slowing this down. Under Armour keeps talking about the need to fast track it and push it forward. They're saying we've got people we've got to hire. We've got to get the show on the road. Where do you think that's going to fall out?
Well, I think certainly before the council leaves. I mean, I think that's very safe to say. But yeah, I as Melody said earlier, I think we're looking at a vote sometimes this fall.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine Pugh, who is the leading contender for the Democratic or for the office of mayor, she's running against Republican Alan Walden, and she's ahead, by most reckonings. Where does she stand on this? We were just talking about the minimum wage. She's been kind of quiet about that. It seems that she's been equally quiet about Port Covington.
I agree. And she claims to, when you ask her about that, I've seen her out in the, out in the community, and she says, I am respecting the process and I'm on the sidelines. So that's where she is. Mm-hmm. We don't really know that's where she stands right now.
A lot of this comes down to whether or not the prognostications here are too optimistic. I mean, one scholar or one person who studies this thing even questioned the long-term viability of Under Armour. I mean, as a company, because let's face it, they kind of knocked Nike off its perch, but who's to say that, in 10 years somebody else is going to come along and knock Under Armour off of this? How contingent is the continued growth, contingent is this project on a continued northern trajectory for the revenues for Under Armour as an international company?
So Under Armour, the campus is 50 acres. They say it will house 10,000 people. There are currently about 2,000 Under Armour workers in the city. The rest of the development is private. Sagamore's not doing it. Under Armour's not doing it. And a lot of it is supposed to be generated by sort of spin-off business. But I think in that sense, there's a lot of room for questions about where that stands.
Yeah.
I know that I read the Under Armour, the annual report, and they are aggressively going after new business. They're trying to break into the soccer, the international soccer market with jerseys. And of course, everybody who's watching the Olympics sees that their outfits are being worn by the Fab Five on the women's gymnastics. So they are growing. We don't have any doubt about that, but we don't have a crystal ball as to where this will all lead. And I think that's one of the X factors that's been in this discussion from the start.
Sagamore has also requested about $1.1 billion in public financing for infrastructure outside the campus, like, new entrances and stuff on I-95. One of the big proposals for a grant just recently was turned down, Natalie. I mean, so the TIF in Baltimore City isn't the only piece of this puzzle that has to fit in order for this thing to happen. Where does that stand?
Yeah, so they have said that they're going to need $1.1 billion worth of additional state and public money, state and federal money. The state has basically said they're willing to do it. The federal government has been more hesitant, turned down the first grant application. They can submit again. All of the city officials have said that the city money is also contingent on Sagamore having its financing lined up for other pieces of the project. So it's a tough needle to thread.
Yeah, it's a Rubik's Cube, isn't it? And Melody, just before we finish up, we got about 10 seconds left. The impact on the schools. People are very concerned that this is going to raise property values, which is going to then be a problem for the schools.
That was debated last night. And in fact, the number $315 million potential loss to the schools was actually doubled when you look at the special education costs and some of the other costs that weren't figured been before. So it's a problem.
Yeah, and of course, we have other stuff to talk about the next time, affordable housing, guarantees of jobs, et cetera. But appreciate both of your work on the reporting of this and for coming in this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melody Simmons covers real estate and development for the Baltimore Business Journal. Natalie Sherman covers those issues for the Baltimore Sun. We've got links to their great stories about Port Covington and other issues on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up a little later, our nutrition diva tells us about the pros and cons of meat substitutes. That's coming up right after the news. But first, it's time for the Environment in Focus.